Ask, is anyone going to the Singularity Summit?
No, I cannot afford to go.
Yeah, me either.
when is this?
It's in the
Is that the ethics meeting thing? Or
it's a Singularity Summit, so all of the people were involved.
Where is it?
Kurzweil. It's in New York.
UW.
Oh, this is W. Oh, I'm thinking of the UW one. That's an ethics nanotechnology thing. I'm confused.
No.
I know the one you're talking about. Pricing.
Yeah. It is pricey.
Just going to New York is pricey. I mean, it was free.
I mean, New York, I would go anyway.
Yeah, well, that's...
But, yeah.
I'm from there, so I'm not quite as compelled. But, yeah, that would be nice to...
I can only get a sponsor or something.
Yeah, we should do that. You know, bake sale.
Now I have $5 to go to New York with.
Yeah.
It'll cover the tip for the taxi driver.
Maybe.
Maybe. Exactly.
Well,
here we go. Nanoethics.
Mm.
All
mm-hmm.
I was supposed to say.
Oh, there it is. That's for everything we just talked.
Huh. Very cool.
September 9th, all day. Or the 9th through 11th, it looks like.
Very cool.
Those are very smart people. They're all doctors.
Yeah, they're all
the
leaders in the field.
Looked interesting to me. The one here. I mean, the one in New York is interesting too, but.
The one here, I could definitely.
That I might do. But it means I might as well find a place to live in the city for them because it takes me 3 hours to get. I'm in Vashon, so by the time I do the bus.
Oh, that's far.
No, that's major.
And yet you're still cold.
Of course I do.
Thank you.
I've got to get out of the winter or something.
Well, Matt, do you want to start us off? Because I don't have a whole lot of structure, and you do.
You can supply a few anecdotes if you like.
Don't be relying on me for structure.
I'll do what I want.
Hello, everyone. Thank you guys for coming out to talk about the pros and cons of cryonics. I'm sorry we forgot to bring popsicles. I know you guys were promised, but I just have to rely on icy cold frosty treats while we discuss icy cold frosty treats.
Yes. Cool. So, Matt's going to take the pro side, and I'm going to take the con side, just to kind of
I'm in between. Oh, boy, this is going to be fun.
Yeah, so, and...
We really both, by design, sort of tempered our arguments towards, well, I'm pro, but here are some of the legitimate arguments against, and some of those, well, presenting the against side, but...
Like your cross fight?
That's one of the more minor things.
I would have worn a bow tie had I known.
Would have come with a little knit hat with a poofy ball on top.
Yes.
To keep us warm.
Yes. That's okay. All right. So, my main arguments against cryonics is that I think it's money that could be better spent elsewhere. And I also feel like by the time we have the technology to make it work, we'll have the technology to make it work without having frozen in bunny ears those bodies.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be able to reconstruct from small amounts of tissue. We won't need the whole body or the head or anything, like if we're at that level. I also have other arguments, like... We have the ability to probably freeze, again, in bunny ears, what's the proper term for all that? Well, I'll just call it.
Vitrification.
Vitrify people, but no one's really putting research into how to unvitrify them, as I could tell.
Stuff that they try has been very unsuccessful.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's freeze them and vitrify them, cryopreserve them.
Right.
And hope the future figures out a way to get them back.
Right.
I don't think it's a large enough group that there will be a reason to figure out how to get them back.
Right. The current number that are cryopreserved at the moment is, I think, 1,700, somewhere in that order of magnitude.
I thought it was just going to be, a few dozen. That's a lot.
That's what it was when I was first involved 30 years ago.
Dudes in the fridge in the back?
Yeah. Yeah, I seriously thought it was just some really extremely rich people.
No, Richard Ettinger in the Midwest has a low-cost version of it.
Yeah, it's
low cost. Does it actually work?
Well, it works to the extent that you believe it works. I mean, I kind of agree on the negative side because I was involved in actual research with it, and I came away very unimpressed with sort of the same conclusion that by the time it's more viable and something you really want to depend on, there's going to be alternate ways to get to that issue. That's I promote moderate hypothermia, sort of medical coma, as a way of staying, you know, intact, because I'm not sure we can bring us back from just some tissue. Maybe it'll come from the brain, but I'm not sure you exist here.
Yeah.
Even if you're very talented.
but that stuff has yet to happen.
Right.
So it won't help the people who are down there that want to be.
You mean how to reanimate them?
No. I mean, like, if I die
right
now, and the technology... Yeah.
Yeah. Unless you've already signed up for the way that I'm most familiar with cryopreservation and burning is you contract with either Alcor or Cryogenics Institute, CI. Set up a life insurance policy that's exclusively through them, and that's how the argument is that it's affordable to the middle class. It's still disproportionately Western, first world type of middle class and upper middle class folks who are signed up for this. I mean, when you look at the numbers, and 90-some-odd% of those folks are middle, upper middle class guys from the U.S. Still, the argument goes you pay somewhere within the realm of $300 to $1,000 a year for this supplemental life insurance policy signed out to them as the beneficiary upon your medical diagnosed death. They step in, ideally you're in the hospital at that point, that as the instant you're diagnosed, they're already there and can start taking care of you if it happens. You kind of have to cross your fingers and
deal with a lot of medical resistance right on the spot.
So that comes back to Willow's objection, which is she says by the time we have better technology, well, we don't have time to wait until there is better technology. People who sign up for these things are dying right now.
Right.
So the question is, what do you do right now?
So right now we just throw them into whatever technology we have right now.
And
hope that it'll work.
Faith. It's like religious stuff. I mean, I don't think of it so much scientifically.
Sure.
I mean, even though the basis is scientific, but the reason you do it is faith, not because there's a lot of evidence.
So there's really no reason to wait, because there's no waiting. Like, if you wait, you'd be dead.
Yeah.
Right. No, in that sense, I agree, and that's where I'm disagreeing with you, that the idea is that if you come down to a choice of nothingness versus maybe.
Someone's even come up with a term, cryocrastination.
I like that. That's
well, I've been meaning to sign up for cryonics, but...
And I had a popsicle yesterday. Does that count?
Right. If you take, and this is getting perhaps a bit off in the distance with it, but if you take the sort of many worlds approach to quantum mechanics, I already feel like I'm going way too far off with this.
I still want to know where you're going with this.
If you take that approach, every day that you don't sign up for cryonics, there are branches of you and thousands of time, as Terry Pratchett would put it, that are dying because of one of those 1 million accidents. You're killing off little bits of you or little potential.
That is an amazing tangent, but it's still a tangent.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
awesome.
The same
theory also says you're never dying, because there's always one you that's alive.
Yeah. Which is immense reassurance to the you know, in some branch of probability, there's me that's a millionaire, rich and famous. That's not a huge amount of consolation to me. Middle class and
out here. Yeah. Yay, hanging out here.
Woo!
Okay, so my argument against doing it now is that is scientific energy and money that could be spent on bettering all of humanity, or even a larger chunk of humanity, and not just being like, it's all about me.
The meanwhile, people are dying.
Yeah.
That's true of any technology that's used as a luxury. I mean, why do we bother building iPods and laptops when this money could be spent to feed the poor and the homeless and the rest of the world?
That's a good point. However, those things are still being marketed to a larger group of people.
But there's a rising tide lifting all boats theory about early adopters.
What if you don't have the money for a boat?
What?
If you're too poor to afford a boat.
Right. Well, you're logged then.
Yeah.
But the point being that I think that you're
well,
right.
The government confiscated your law.
Well, that's true. And if the beginning process is the struggle over basic equality and having some kind of an equal playing field, then it's a social political thing. But I don't think the technology per se draws us away, since we get lessons from it and we learn other things. In other words, there's a kind of milieu that goes with that. So if you the reanimation, for example, or the freezing or vitrification, may in itself only help a very small group of people. But I'll bet you that there's spin-off technology that will result from that that will have broader application.
And I would hope so, but so much of it right now just seems to be focusing on preserving people. We're not working on that. That's another issue I have with it, is what is the cryonics community doing to figure out how to thaw people out and how to cure those diseases? Because
right.
If they're doing both of those, and not just one or the other, but both, then I think it's time well spent.
Well, that was a big argument back, you know, as I said, 25 years ago, and that's the reason I left the movement. It was too focused on stuff that was monoculture, in a sense, and not dealing with some of the other issues. And you still only have a couple of organizations after all those years. So something didn't resonate while we're caught on. And I think it was just too early. And I think if we take another approach to it now, and have very clearly identified broad applications that aren't serendipitous, but are part of the design process, saying that if we learn to do this, this means we'll have better time of transplantation of organs, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe we're going to learn that in order to make cryonics work at all, you're going to have to grow parts of your body in unique ways, and being able to do that may obviate the need for it in the first place.
Yeah.
So there's a kind of a chicken and egg process. And I don't think it's all wasted, although some.
Now, the link that Theo sent said that the question of cryonics is whether the human brain can be preserved with current technology, and reanimating the human later on is seen as a long-term problem.
Say it again?
The central issue of cryonics is whether the brain can be preserved cryonically, and reanimating the human is seen as a long-term issue.
So we have no.
And this also says it's incorrect to cite that it's based on faith because of the reliance on future technology, because these technologies are foreseeable, even widely anticipated in other fields. The same way that spaceflight was predicted and based on expected advances in materials and control systems long before it was actually possible.
I don't think that at all says that it's not based on faith, because it says it's based on the idea that within a certain number of years this will come to pass. That, I mean,
well, there's a difference between faith saying that there's some supernatural being out there that might grant wishes, and prediction based on currently accepted scientific.
But I think the parallel is actually pretty valid, because if we say that we're going to invest $300 to $1,000 a month or a year in a life insurance policy to freeze ourselves, or when that money could theoretically be spent to improve conditions for everyone worldwide. I mean, that's like, I'm going to tithe directly to my church rather than I'm going to go out and help my community, or I'm going to give money to help people in the third world. It doesn't matter if you're coming at it from a religious perspective or a technological perspective. From a pragmatic monetary perspective, it's pretty selfish.
I think a part of that is also that if that money were to be going towards research having to do with it, then it's less faith-based and more action-based.
Well, when I said faith, I meant personal, but not religious. I should have been clear about that.
The point of faith, I feel like, comes down to the difference, I guess, in the point of faith comes down to intelligent design versus evolution. Neither one is a proven fact. But the faith in intelligent design is a different kind of faith than the faith in evolution.
Yes.
And so the faith in evolution is closer to the faith in that cryonic world.
That's why I say it's personal versus religious. But there's a thing you said, I mean, it's a thing where the technologies are there, but the social engineering issues often eclipse what's possible technologically. They become the larger discussion problems, especially
in what sense?
Well, the resistance, for example. Mm-hmm. One of the things you said, which is it selfish? Is it just focused on the individual? I don't think that's necessarily a bad idea, as long as it's a big enough table for everybody. So there's a kind of a equivalence issue there, that it, selfish is okay if you're including the world.
Everybody gets to play, which everybody doesn't.
No, of course. And so that's why I say it becomes a human engineering or political issue to resolve.
And historically, things like that sort of balance out through time and economics. If it's really, really expensive to do this process and it works, then the really, really rich will do it. But in doing that, we'll develop new technologies that make it
cheaper.
That's
right,
and then
buy
a
cheap car now,
exactly,
because somebody expensive, et cetera.
Yeah.
We're going to see that especially in this in this area, because insurance is never going to reimburse this.
Yeah.
But life insurance does pay for it. So there's a curious thing about just by realigning what you call it. And with the right to die in Washington now means you might not have to wait till you're totally deteriorated to be suspended, which often makes you a non-candidate. I don't know if you're familiar with that. You have to go through a medical exam to even be a candidate. And if you're half deteriorated already, it may be too late, according to the current protocol. So there's something to be said for saying, okay, I'm not coming back. Let's do it today, you know, while I'm still functional. And that could not happen if you didn't have a dignity of death type of law.
So that's a good question, is when do we call someone dead?
Right.
And the cryonics approach is that you're not actually dead until your brain cells turn to goo or something, which is entropy, irreversible. So that's why they want to preserve you before your brain cells turn itself to you.
Exactly.
Which is actually means that you're in the cryonic sense, you're dead if you have some kind of brain disease that destroys your brain while you're bodily living.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
And that's another point where it's a sort of a chicken and egg question, is after discussed in serious cryonics literature, the point of, well, by all objective current medical standards, a person we've got cryopreserved is dead, TM. But you have to consider that if there's a successful revival later on in the future, that they weren't actually dead, but just in a state of stasis or what have you. It's just like we're talking about Schrodinger's revival here. Are they dead or aren't they? Well, unless they're successfully revived or not. Is the dude in the box dead or not?
That's going to affect all the
things. So is there a test, or I guess not a test, or precedent for, and obviously we couldn't do this on humans, but taking something that's alive and in relatively good condition, not till it's dead by today's standards, but living by today's standards.
So assisted suicide.
And, well, no, not suicide, but putting it through the cryonics process of freezing it and then bringing it back and having it live. Like, is that conduit?
No, has not really been
insects.
All these years,
insects and frogs.
But not
mammals.
Only animals that naturally produce a glycogen or I mean, you don't, animals
Antarctic
are not hibernators.
What? Antarctic fish, for instance.
Right. That's right. But you don't have higher brain function animals yet that can come back. And the closest, in fact, I'm going to be doing a research project on some horses of all places in Siberia. There's a group called Yakutsk. These horses stay out all winter in sub-zero weather. Now, this is very, very cold. This is where you freeze solid, actually. I mean, right through the head. Now, this is so unusual. The horses just stand there. They're shaggy. I mean, they look like you expect. But they come back. And that's very, very unusual. Because a horse is a lot closer to us than a frog or
right. A fish or whatever.
Yeah.
Do the camels up there, do they too? The Arctic, the Siberian camels?
I don't know anything about camels. I just know the ponies.
Oh, okay.
These they're small. They're more diminutive. Mm-hmm. They're not very large. That's another feature. But from what I've heard, and until, you know, somebody is supposed to look at some genetic markers and see if they cross correlate with some of the things we've seen in ground squirrels in the north versus Mexican ground squirrels, which each have different hibernating qualities. The ones in the north obviously do it full time, and ones in the south sort of are dilettantes.
And how long was that period of suspension for those horses by freezing?
How long?
Yeah.
It's probably, I would say, minimally several days at a time, maybe even a week. It's not like the whole season, because it isn't, you know, even in Siberia, it's not wall to wall below zero. But there are long, long periods.
But they're not, the point is that they're not freezing.
No, they are.
Oh, they are. Okay.
They're totally, I mean, 2 days of standing out in, say, 40 below zero weather.
Okay.
You're going to be pretty solid.
But wait, I thought the animals that undergo this kind of process.
Yes.
Don't have the water inside the body freeze because there's some kind of antifreeze.
Not
chemical.
Horses. That's why this is interesting. Horses,
so horses
don't have it. No.
Right. Because
the higher animals don't have any protection.
Which is amazing, because I thought when you freeze a cell, it explodes.
Well,
not
when you thaw
such.
It,
no.
It is
no?
The problem when you freeze it.
Right.
What?
When you thaw it is the problem, not when you freeze it. It doesn't explode.
The
it expands, but not you know, catastrophic.
But it's still intact then.
Yeah, yeah. You could freeze pretty safely.
What
you
damage
can't really?
Actually occurs because of the ice crystals?
Yeah,
the ice crystals.
Yeah.
What damage actually occurs in animals like that? I believe they've done it on higher mammals and humans and whatnot, not Siberian horses. Yeah, ice crystals will tear it up, and all the relevant information up there is to current technology lost.
Right.
What's amazing about the horses?
Yeah.
It's
K-U-S-T-K-A.
Where damage is incurred by the freezing and thawing process is repaired.
Right. As part of the metabolism. And it reminds me a little bit of our own mammalian diving reflex. You know, if we, especially as kids, fall into ice-cold water, we don't just start drinking. Our metabolism shuts off. We have a little more time than you expect for your oxygen supply. So right in, even us, I mean, you know, we're sort of the least adaptive in that sense. And yet, kids go through terrible dunkings all the time, come back.
Yeah.
Way beyond what you expect.
Maybe they don't freeze at, like...
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that we have a reflex
so
that you can modulate.
So there's something in the horse
right,
that actually repairs the horse's cells on a cellular level.
Or it keeps it from the damage in the first place. I suspect my understanding...
That damage is physical. Like, that's...
No, it's
physics. Right?
Okay, let me give you an example. If you release a hormone in your bloodstream, and that hormone's effect is to, say, dilate certain capillaries in your brain, and therefore permit certain oxygen delivery so that the shutting down is slower and maybe in a more orderly way. I mean, nature's had quite a few years to work on horses to get it right, you know. And so I suspect it's not going to be quite as exotic or necessarily something that we can do. But a good friend of mine, who's into hypnosis and all kinds of Zen stuff, believes that we can actually do it to ourselves, that we can actually learn to hypnotize ourselves or to basically go into a state where we, you know, get moderate hypothermia, that would mean freezing solid.
They've also done studies with especially people in the Marines and stuff,
mm-hmm.
where they can go in much colder water for much longer periods of time, and that they do heat scans of their body.
Right,
like,
thermography. Right.
They modify it much better than
how they distribute it, right,
yeah.
Exactly. Because one of the big issues, as you know, is when you're cold, do you want your blood to go in to protect your organs, or do you want it to be outside of you to protect your breastplate? Only you know what's up ahead and how long you're going to be where and what. So if you could make that decision for your body, that would be very important.
Yeah. So does anyone else want to say anything more about the actual physical stuff involved with it and the science, or do we want to go on to ethical issues of dealing with thawing people out?
Just one bit about so I heard that a valid way of reviving instead of just bringing you back inside the body that was frozen is to somehow scan the information that was in the brain while it's that was frozen. So scan it up to the computer. This is part of uploading.
Yeah.
So that quite ties into the whole ethical thing or some kind of philosophical idea of, you know, what happens after that.
That's really an important area. I mean, I think that's where you face the real problem, which is even if we could scan everything perfectly, either electronically or biologically, making replicas, that doesn't make you feel the continuity of self.
Right,
is that
it,
makes
is
you
it
alive.
Like you feel like,
so you could have a twin, but
you.
It doesn't help you.
In what sense wouldn't a physically perfect or as perfect down to a degree of fidelity as you really want to get it to, in what sense isn't a copy that's as physically perfect as you need it to you?
There's no
well, it wouldn't be, because the moment you have done that and you go off, it's like when you back up your computer, the moment you start typing new stuff that isn't backed up, you know, it's kind of like you could stop your process and spin it off and say, well, here's copy number one.
Mm-hmm.
But that person is going to go live its life from that point on completely differently than you going off and living your life.
Well,
even
why am I on one branch and not the other?
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you're trying to be on two at the same time, like,
well, you're not in both places at the same time, but who's to say if at this point you make two exact copies of me,
right,
and say destroy the original?
This is awesome. Just
yes.
Not cryonics.
All right.
Fair enough.
We need to have. We definitely need to have an uploading / continuity.
And there's a question as to whether that's actually doable. That's why. That's my skepticism.
Yeah.
Thing. Whether even if we scan perfectly, transplant, do all this stuff, I don't know if you can get the sense of self that is reflective and has the wisdom of your life.
Yeah.
I don't think it's as simple as we'd like it to be.
Right.
Tying this back into cryonics, if
yes,
we could upload ourselves into a backup and not send that backup on its merry way, but store it in sort of a cleaner version of cryonics, a more less cold,
how could you
less
store yourself and not being active?
But if you, but I mean, just like cryonics, you're not being active; you're storing your
right. But we also don't know you're going to be you when you come back.
Right.
That's my big concern. Not that it will be a person who comes up,
mm-hmm.
but when people come out of very serious amnesia, they don't.
They're not usually the same, and those,
some do, some don't.
A lot of head traumas will irrevocably change a person's personality.
That's what my markers are. I tend to be more negative about it only because I'm not being convinced yet that the sense of self continuity of self is preserved. Even if all your memories are there.
And yet you go to sleep every night without fear.
Right, because you dream and you have a way of restarting the brain all night long, every 90 minutes. Your rhythmic thing is what keeps you attached.
I guess another question would be is that a problem in cryonics, in bringing back that person and having them not necessarily be the same person? Is that a problem?
It's a huge ethical problem.
They would have to convince themselves before they sign up.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like,
that you might come back with someone else.
Am I actually going to die and then come back, or am I going to die and then someone else with my memory?
I mean, it'd be
technological
reincarnation, but how is that a problem? I don't necessarily see
it. Well, it's only a problem to you right now. And in other words, I'm taking this from a very selfish point of view that says, okay, if I like who I am and I want to continue myself, that's why I'm interested in these various techniques, right? I'm not interested in reproducing myself. I mean, there's biological ways in which it's less complicated and less costly.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is, why would I do a process and then produce someone else that had this vague sense of, I used to be somebody else, and how does it help me? So if
But if you're dead anyway.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Do you want to be dead anyway? That's why I kind of take the negative on the cryonic side ultimately by saying maybe that's not the right approach.
But I mean, if I don't know, it seems like it's sort of you're lucky to get anything at that point. If you're dead anyway, and your biological being and all of your memories are going to be gone. Period. Your choices are that, or potentially having them come back and be everything be the same. Like there's a 50-50 shot of it all being okay, or there's the other shot of it being a completely different person with all those memories. But
right.
Those memories are still around, so...
But the memories itself doesn't make you.
No, but how did that not... I don't know.
And so I think the way you win the lottery there is playing it right down the middle, which is to say using some of the technology to suspend you, suspend that animation, if you want to call it, in terms of being alive, and you can see some brain waves, some brain activity, and bring you back, and through a lot of rehab. This woman, a friend of mine, went through this thing and lost her memory and went through a terrible thing. It took a year of rehab to come back. But she never stopped having continuity of consciousness. It's just she went into various states and had to relearn everything, okay, like in a stroke, for example.
Yeah.
So it may seem as if you've lost yourself for periods, but you do come back. Whereas in cryonics, it's a much bigger gamble to me than just bringing your temperature down to say, 65 degrees Fahrenheit, 50 degrees Fahrenheit, and keep you alive in that state and let you be able to have some brain activity. Because I'm not sure if you stop brain activity long enough, for a long enough period, that you can get it back, even if the memories have a kind of a persistent quality neurochemical speed.
So you're saying that you get the memories back, but not the
not
self.
Right. And self is what I'm interested in.
Where
does self live?
Now
we've really gone.
We're,
I'm sorry.
We're
I saw Will's look
kind
of like,
that's way philosophical. That's not cryonics.
Yeah,
right.
No, you're right. Okay, so we want to come back, have our self intact. That's my point.
Right, so...
I agree.
If you're not even sure that you're bringing yourself back, then that takes away what I see as a reason for doing it, which
right.
is a quest for a longer life.
Exactly.
So then you're just putting more people that are probably less adept at living in the time that people are around. Like if you bring someone back in 200 years and they have to deal with stuff.
What if taking a page from computer science, we could come up with some kind of checksum protocol, if there's, you can use it in conjunction with some advanced data, brain imaging, do some kind of checksum value from that, and then you write in your conditions for revival. If revival meets, some certain percentage of that checksum
mm-hmm.
received, otherwise abort.
Yeah, I can see that happening.
I'll go along with the thread that we were carrying earlier. If the checksum relies just on, for lack of a better term, the physical data that you backed up, often in the philosophical thinking of you can have all the data itself, but if the actual process stops. I'm going off on a tangent on Hofstadter, and
yeah.
I'm going to bring Planck time into it. And
it's hard not to, because they're more parallel than one thinks. I mean,
yeah.
the physical suspension is really not as complicated. Bringing back is, but doing it in the first place, which you've mentioned a few times, is really as important. Should there be another approach to immortality that's parallel with while people are doing this?
Yeah, and I also, I don't understand how somebody's brain could handle having a clear gap between how things are right now and how things might be in 200 years, which is maybe they'll be very similar.
I think
culture shock
will be,
enormous even in 5 years.
Exactly.
I mean, I feel like that people have experienced said things. It's not the norm, but like you'll go into a coma and you'll wake up
right.
a year later and everything will be different. It's just that on a grander scale. And so it's, we as people can adapt to that. It's not
right.
something we're built for, but we've
right.
worked through
it's
it.
To stop playing devil's advocate,
yeah.
I'm actually taking my side, which is the pro side.
which is a very good point.
Right. Revival in 200 years, it if we're assuming revival, which is a technology we don't have right now, but are assuming we're going to have at some point in the future, why not assume that we'll have, if not social structure, at least the reality technology, what have you, to be able to catch somebody up. Okay, here's your past 100 years of history, social philosophy, what have you, program that you can run through, and you can, you know, like a 2-week course or what have you. Why not watch it at that point?
Okay.
I think if Newton or Shakespeare were alive today, right, they have been trouble adapting.
I'm just thinking of one solution I've seen in fiction. In Rainbow's End, the main character is trying, I think he, I can't remember if he's frozen for 35 years or whatever, but he comes back and he's just put in high school with his granddaughter.
Yeah.
Because he needs to figure out how this society runs, and he's at basically a high school level anymore.
Right. I also hope there's going to be a lot of people. You were talking about numbers of people. I think at best case, see, like in any real leading edge research, maybe a few thousands, tens of, there's not going to be millions of people doing this. Because the time it would take to even get a real program going that was relevant, I think there'll be other ways to get to what we're trying to do, to regrow organs, repair organs internally, fix your amygdala or your hippocampus if you have any memory disorders, you know, rather than replacing the whole brain. You know, you bring it in and say, well, we'll put you up on the rack, you know, we'll rotate your wheels, you know. I mean, it may be like that, actually easier to do it that way than it would be to freeze and bring back a person.
I see it much easier to maintain than to restart here.
Oh, yes. Yes, 100%.
So is there a difference and ethical process, etc., I mean, obviously physical process, between sort of a cryonics restarting and sort of a stasis, some form of stasis technology? Are they different? Is one better? Is it, does it matter?
Probably one's more way expensive. You can try to do a stasis that's not quite basically.
Because then you have to maintain all body functions instead of just keeping it at a certain time.
Right. But it would bypass the whole having to restart anything.
Right.
If you're restarting them.
If we keep the brain alive.
Well, you have to have an artificial womb in effect, an adult womb, as in the sense that you're going to breathe fluid, you're going to have saline going, you're going to be
You just have a machine breathe, like, filter your blood and pump oxygen.
Yeah, but you can't lay in a hospital bed and afford to do this. I mean,
yeah,
practical side,
it's
you're going to have to be in a specialized container.
Yeah, at that point, we're sort of, not that it couldn't be feasible, but we're sort of talking about the Soviet technology of, okay, we got a dog set here on some tubes.
Oh yeah,
and
I saw
stays
that.
Stays alive for a while.
Yeah,
I saw that.
It's the next outgrowth of that. I'm sorry.
I think that one of the fundamental reasons why you would prefer cryonics over stasis is that if you're just in a stasis state but still biologically functioning, you're still aging.
Ooh.
And so you'd have to deal with the effects of aging, although the effects of restarting may be just as bad.
And the aging, you know, again, we don't know how long a period this is going to be for. If you say slow, you're aging down by, say, an order, maybe two orders of magnitude, that translates into hundreds of years.
Yeah, again, our ideal is alive and conscious and fully healthy. It's that sort of idea of, well, the term is actuarial escape velocity, where at some point, like we're at the point now that, say, you're getting 3 months of extra lifespan for every year in real time. A lot of math majors project that as an curve, which is not necessarily accurate. They can long, but as such, you can say, well, okay, at some point in the future, there's going to be a period, ideally, where we'll be in 6 months and 9 months, and then we hit that point where we'll be in a year of lifespan for every year of real time. And what happens after that?
Mm-hmm.
That would be nice, but
so
haven't yet.
What obligation, and I read on one of the things that Theo was kind enough to post, what obligation do people have to bring back these individuals? Because
does the future want us?
Right, does the future want us? Because one of the things that they said was, well, there's a contract. Contracts are usually null and void when someone dies. And since they're declared legally dead in order for these things to be allowed, then it gets really
No, you could be a corporation. Corporation survives
the
forever.
Estate can hold up
the corporations are cockroaches.
Yeah. Well, you can be an LLC or an INC either way.
Yeah. The legal bit, as I understand that, is that the contract that you sign is actually one for what they're allowed to do with your remains.
Right.
Okay.
That's what they're using.
Okay.
So legally, yeah, you're dead. They can't do anything until you are legally dead.
Okay. That makes sense.
Legally dead and actually dead.
May or may not be the same thing.
Yeah.
And laws will change. I mean, just talking about contracts. Contracts change, laws change.
Yeah.
I suspect if this were to be a large movement, there'd be a large reaction. But I still am the belief it's going to be a very, very tiny group that actually goes to the war these
rivers. At the point where there's enough interest for
it
to be against the core, there will be enough interest
to do it.
That we can do it right, or B, that we can keep them all alive.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, one of the things that has given me some hope is recent things. I mean, these are little specks of accomplishments, like being able to regenerate neurons.
Mm-hmm.
The whole idea of dealing with Alzheimer's and dementia. I mean, a lot of the things that are coming up now as we're dealing with real clinical problems are also suggesting other strategies.
Mm-hmm.
So the hope that you could, I mean, it sounds ridiculous to say it, but that you could grow more hippocampal tissue without removing the hippocampus if you're starting to have tangles and losing the memory. So to be able to form short-term memories, to be able to, not be dependent on a bum limbic system, to grow them in situ, in where they sit, that's as likely and realistic as having a suspension.
Did you have?
Oh, I was just thinking, the problem with this, the future want us back.
Yeah.
Well, we can, if we can't count on anyone else, we can just tell our great-grandchildren.
If you have kids.
Otherwise.
If they don't decide 10 years into it, no, I'm just going to take the money and run.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily count on family as the ultimate arbitrary.
Well,
some people have great families.
Who would you count on? People who really admire you?
I think that's also...
That's
cruel.
Right. Yeah,
that's cruel to your grandkids, though. I mean, that's, to me, in my Catholic background, it's saying, grandma's in heaven.
Uh-huh.
And you'll see grandma again one day. It's like,
when
it doesn't allow people to move on, which is psychologically necessary. I mean,
which brings up the whole Buffy season 5 argument, though. Yoink, you came back, whether you like it or not.
No, it's okay. I haven't seen that episode, actually. And while I think that the whole argument of, death is a natural part of the cycle and we all need to die and all that other stuff, I think that's kind of questionable, but the people who are involved in your life, when you go away, they have to figure out how to deal with that. Like, especially because there is no guarantee that there's going to be a you again, whether it's from failed regeneration in whatever way, but I think that you can't count on the people that actually know you to have anything to do with bringing you back.
Well, you do have to count on them. That's
they have to know
because
they
otherwise there's nobody who cares about
that
frozen guy.
Well,
but you got to talk to your kids beforehand.
I mean,
make sure they're mentally...
Well, you're assuming kids again, but I mean, I don't have a family, for example. I know a lot of people don't make this choice for all sorts of reasons, and it often comes down to you being a corporation or having a lawyer.
Yeah,
it
doesn't have to be
kids. How you
the
become.
People who are interested in reviving someone who's cryonically suspended are the people who are interested in being cryonically suspended. So you form a group that...
It's a self-interest.
That
was
true.
That makes a lot of sense.
And self-perpetuating. It's a mimetic
group
rather than a genetic group, but it works just the same.
Perfectly.
And
affinity groups are more reliable than families sometimes for stuff like that.
I mean, not everybody has family.
Right, that's right. Yeah, that's why I was bridling about that. I mean, it's a good point if you have a good family. That's great.
Some kind of group of people who knows that you are there frozen and cares enough to bring you back no matter what.
Take care of us.
I'm playing a show tonight at 9 on Roosevelt Cafe Racer. If you guys want to come by after, totally should. But I have to leave now so I can go set up.
Okay.
I'll see Thursday's show.
Totally.
All right.
Bye.
You know what's kind of like one of the things you said? It's somebody goes away to prison, the family doesn't necessarily disintegrate and go on. They still have to go on without you. They have to set a new social world, but
yeah.
They expect the person to return someday,
yeah.
If assuming you have a limited sentence.
Right.
Yeah, but that's also because there's a very high success rate of people leaving prison when they're supposed to or even sooner.
Yeah.
It's not like, yeah, they might be back in 50 years, you know, maybe.
I agree with you about that. What I'm saying is that as time goes on, our the predictability, the probability of being able to say this is what's going to happen
mm-hmm.
gets more accurate.
Oh, yeah.
And so eventually it gets to be sort of like, well, daddy's going away to an institution for a while, and he's going to go on an extended vacation. I mean,
it's just that same old talk you have to have with your children about what death means.
In any event, right.
In any event.
Right.
You just change
sure.
a little bit to say, oh, I may come back.
So you
maybe.
Do your homework because
yes.
I'm going to check on you.
So what... So besides family being, or people, or mimetic groups, or genetic groups being, or incorporations being obligated to bring you back, why would you inflict yourself on the future? Because I mean, you're not going to be, if even if you're able to come back fully capable in all your senses and as you, with all your memories, we're adaptable, yes, but there's also a certain point where your brain isn't able to pick up as much stuff as it used to. Like, 25 is the age when most people quit learning new mathematical skills.
Well, I'm not sure that's true.
Statistically, that's...
Oh, yeah, well, if you take it to its curve,
But
I know a lot of people in my age group...
Right, but like serious mathematical theories.
Okay.
Like, not just I learned this new trick, but like.
But is that the basis?
Well,
is that the basis?
Generally, brain plasticity goes down over time.
Right.
Right, and
but
so.
But wisdom increases too, and so there you get an interesting.
Currently,
yeah.
Again, I'm gonna take the pro argument again.
Okay.
We can bring people back. Why can't we? And there are already, there's excellent technology for increasing brain plasticity. Why not in 50 or 100 or 200 years when we can successfully revive somebody from cryopreservation? Can't we, A, chemically, neurobiologically, give them a brand new fresh brain,
right.
so to speak? Or if we're going to go the technological route and go ahead and upload them,
Yeah.
Yeah.
Choose the group even more than one.
Then how about overpopulation?
Ah, that's close to the thing I was arguing, that there'll only be a few thousand people who do it. We're not going to get overpopulated because people are freezing.
Okay.
Not even nearly. And only because of your own argument, which is by the time we all get really good at it, we'll get good enough to not need to do it.
Yeah.
But
the
time
place.
We all get really good at it, conceivably. Again, if we're going to postulate that we can bring people back from prior preservation,
right.
why wouldn't we postulate? Well, okay, by the time we have that technology, it's going to be either hydroponic farms so that we can feed 10 times as many people as we're doing now, colonies elsewhere, or in case of uploading, so much for needing food and space. And
oh, absolutely. It'll be space travel.
It's as much as you can fit on a hard drive.
Yeah, I mean, one of the arguments about overpopulation, I mean, I had to do this when I was looking at the world housing, which is if you took 10 billion people, half of whom are in the cities now, that crossed over in this last couple of years, more than half of the world lives in urban areas. But even if everyone got out of the city and everyone went back to the land, you took an area of about 3 million square miles, roughly the size of the U.S., or Australia or something, could fit 10 billion people with only 5 to the 8.
That's assuming that all land is habitable.
No, that's assuming that we learn to live on a lot of land that we don't accept now because it's too far from where our river cities were and our ports were. Our history has built huge amounts of populations
around
in places for old reasons that aren't necessary.
But we also function better in cities.
I'm not convinced of that.
I mean, unless travel takes no energy, then...
Well, it may take... different form of energy. For example, just to answer the first thing about spreading out, okay,
mm-hmm.
again, this is over a long period of time, but there are huge areas like the Sahel in Africa and and similar areas in Asia that are as big as the area I'm talking about right now, that the only reason people don't live there is there's no arable land. This topsoil has all blown off years ago, erosion, mm-hmm. whatnot. People coming back with permaculture knowledge mm-hmm. and the right kind of eco-villages will revitalize them and make it a place to live. And if these people have employment and have other ways of living than having to sort of commute to a place, then those are viable alternatives. Not to really empty the seas, I was exaggerating, but I'm saying that even if you took all the rural people now in substandard housing or shanty towns that bring the cities mm-hmm. and put them, you know, gave them more alternatives for sustainable dwellings and living conditions, then the overpopulation spreads out and you have really a large number of potential consumers and collaborators, not people that eat your dinner.
But I mean, even something as simple as water, if you look at Phoenix or at Las Vegas.
There is enough water. When people don't spend it all on golf courses and spray into the air to cool themselves. Do you know, I do this at home. I pull out about 2 gallons of water a day for the dehumidifier.
Let's talk about more of this later. I'm sorry. I totally indulged in that tangent as well.
But it's a good point about water and stuff that is doable. Just believe for a minute. We can talk about it another time, but there's no water shortage. It's just shortage of how cheap the water.
Okay, then how about overpopulation issues not in people, but like right now there are not enough jobs for people,
right.
at least in the way that we've structured our
environment. That's right, exactly. Because we've gone, again, it's the legacy disease, legacy disorder. We started, it's like, people manufactured buggy whips were very concerned when the cars came along.
Yeah.
But, eventually you do other work.
Right, point of order.
Yeah.
It is not done. it is not necessarily jobs that's what's needed, it's sustenance.
Yes.
You can sustain yourself without necessarily having a job. And to the point where, and again, I'm going to draw on Bucky Fuller and the notion of superabundance, ephemeralization, do more with less. The point where we've survived having 10 billion people on the planet, we've learned to some degree, like we've learned now, to be able to do more with less. At that point, again, in any potential future where we've made it that far, it seems not certain, but I would think it was plausible that we've developed that sort of superabundance to be able to provide for everybody, if not free, then ridiculously inexpensive, to the point where you're working because you like to do it, want to do it, rather than for desire for sustenance.
If that's guaranteed to you basically by the sort of
guaranteed national or I suppose global income.
It's so likely to go that way because the
condition.
If
it's
doesn't
likely
go
that, to go that way,
way
if we survive. Right.
To destroy the world. So, I mean, there's no question that we have to solve these problems that are of global nature, but part of that is also kind of retooling what we do to live. And shifting away, as you say, from the job orientation to sustenance, which the job is more like trading art or programs or more things that result from being highly educated and 300 years old.
I guess my main issue is that the probability of all of these things working the way that it would need to justify spending the money on yourself, on continuing yourself, instead of, it's like, because you're spending the money on yourself, all these things that are dependent on you coming back are not going to happen because you're not, does that make sense?
No, like, because it's first of all, too few people, it's a rounding, the amount of dollars is not even worth worrying about. Number two, people spend fortunes on vacations and pastimes and pleasures, and I'd go after those people first who are spending huge amounts of money on, pleasure boats or something. I mean, you could find vast sums of money that are sucked up in non-productive, non-futuristic endeavors that are far
But those are people that would not be spending their money on futuristic.
No, I know, but my point is that the amount of people who actually would throw it into, say, bad science or misguided cryonics, let's say.
Okay.
Which are tens of thousands, not
okay.
tens of millions.
Well, still,
that's a good point. I
yes.
think Will was trying to say whether I, as a, what I call it, futurist, something like that, whether I should invest that money I have into freezing myself or into something that would actually help the future happen faster, easier.
Would that money get you anywhere? Here, just do a hard dollar thing. Let's say $50,000 was your insurance policy, $100,000.
Yeah.
And you have that in your hand liquid, and you could donate it to an institution tomorrow. How much do you think it's going to take in dollars? I'm just curious what your image is to do some of the science we're talking about. Because I've seen some estimates of even some very modest, you know, neuro work, energy work, and I'm involved with people doing some research in other areas. And the numbers we're looking at today are in the trillions. In the trillions for the simplest medical advances that are going to really benefit large scale.
Yeah, but it's still, $50,000 is going to...
But people spend so much more on things that are far more dubious that you could reach them and convince them, whether it's through taxes or write-offs or other ways,
yeah.
for that money to get into good use, as you say. Rather, but I see these, somebody spending money on chronics is like somebody going out and buying jewelry or a fancy car. It's strictly ego, but it doesn't destroy the world itself. I don't think it's as big an issue as we could think it is, right? I don't think it's like we're all going to, 20 years from now, talk about freezing, because I think, as you said earlier, the important part is going to be other stuff.
It's like getting a midlife crisis and buying a Ferrari.
Yeah. It's not the end of the world that you do that. It won't cost everyone in Kenya their breakfast. If everyone did it, it would. So I don't disagree with the ultimate point, but I think social changes of what we think our priorities are the things to put our efforts in, rather than saying we shouldn't spend personal money on something because it doesn't really help the future. I mean, there's an ethical issue I agree with, but then there's a practical side.
It's an issue of, that's just one part of it, but it's, the idea of cryonics is so based on other people's efforts.
Yes.
And that's my general point, is that instead of contributing to those general efforts, even if it's only a drop in the bucket, that you're dependent on other people making progress that benefits you.
And maybe you return it. Maybe your result is, here's a good one. You come back 200 years from now, and they find that you have antibodies or antigens that were produced way back, and nobody else has them on the planet anymore, and there's a huge plague pouring through, and they find that your blood has the earlier antibodies that have disappeared off the planet.
Why wouldn't they have stored those?
Well, they might have. No, because you don't know everything that's going to come. That's why they do botanical research in the Amazon. I mean, they go in the Amazon and say, what plants have what chemicals there?
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of undiscovered stuff about your blood.
That's
how's that for?
Awfully fortunate if that's actually the case, but...
No, I'm just giving you an offhanded reason for why one could look at someone's contribution from bringing them back hundreds of years later and find that they can make a contribution.
Okay, I still think it's so dependent on other people accomplishing things that benefit you.
Yes.
And if that's the case, what's wrong with that? I mean, why shouldn't you limit the choice for people to pursue that?
It's like life support.
It's
right.
not in. That's the thing, though, is that I'm not into life support. Like, I figure.
Well, then you don't have to.
Yeah,
I'll pull a plug on you.
Thank
really
you.
To.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
It reminds me of how there, in a similar way, there are people that should have been retired based on our retirement age who are still in positions who are not moving on and doing what our culture has decreed that they should do so that the younger people can move up. So now you have all these
calcified brains.
Yeah, you have all these incredibly talented younger people who have nowhere to go.
Right.
And so it's just like it's not allowing that cycle to happen.
Sure, it is. You take all these old timers and worry about, put them in the ice, and let the new people develop, and then bring them out, and there'll be, entertainment on whatever shows they have, reality shows. So You were frozen for 400 years. Tell us what it was like.
But why would people subject themselves to that?
That's what I worry about, is when I wake up, will I be treated as some kind of freak?
Depends on how long.
Some kind of second-class citizen.
Maybe.
Or
maybe your lunch for somebody.
Yeah.
If you like some science fiction. You know.
But, I mean, all those other cases would be a small price to pay. And
that's
actually,
right.
And, you know, going back to this whole future shock, culture shock concern,
yeah.
The vanguard of the people who are going to be doing this are most likely looking forward to that sort of thing. I mean, sci-fi enthusiasts are...
Yeah.
That's if they retain their selves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
But, you know, hopefully we can get some kind of like checksum thing or whatever.
Yeah.
To help
aliens
mitigate
have come down and invaded the Earth, eaten all the humans, and after they're done, they open up the boss and they're like, ooh, dessert.
Yeah.
Exactly. I
it's
mean,
like
it could
the
just
alternate
well
ending
happen.
To Army of Darkness when he drinks too much of the potion and he sleeps for too long and he sits past the apocalypse.
But, you know, that's a whole interesting thing, that here we have this unknown, and it's sort of like a gamble. What are you willing to gamble on in terms of, I call it the essential goodness, maybe that goodness of people, meaning the kindness of strangers to take care of you if you were run over by a car and left in the cold.
I don't trust people.
I know what I'm saying.
I love people and I don't trust them.
But you'd be glad that there's a procedure to take care of you. That people pick you up who you don't know, take you to a hospital that you're not even awake, and keep you alive, and hopefully someday say bye. Here's the bill. But, you know, nonetheless, completely unrelated people don't even know who you are, because there's both an empathy, a human factor, and then there's a job. That's their job. So I trust them, not because of an inherent issue. I think there's a lot of conflict. But I trust that most people will try to do the right thing who are medical professionals. Most of them.
But then there's all sorts of societal and economic pressures on them to do their job properly.
Exactly. And that could run both ways.
Let's get an estimate of what the odds are, you think, of you get coming back and you cry yourself right now. I would say 1 in 100.
It depends on what I die from. It depends on when I die.
Exactly.
So you die from heart attack and they freeze it, like ideal case.
Okay.
How long are you willing to wait? That's...
Right.
See,
well,
your chances
of being revived in 10 years...
I'm trying to do the probabilities at this point. Okay, I die in hospital with the team right there.
Yeah.
Where do I think the future of humanity is going to go and how long do I think? I would actually have to sit down and do that calculation.
How
because
optimistic?
I can't... If you want to talk about straight probabilities, I'm going to have to take the Bayesian route and say 50-50 on that because I don't have sufficient information.
And also, there's a whole bunch of unknown variables that are popping up while we're having this analysis. The part that throws the wild card in this. Well,
this wouldn't be very fun in Vegas.
What?
Sorry. I wouldn't go to Vegas. I'm a man.
But I think you can basically look at it, and I think you're right, that it's when, what, and, you know, for certain procedures, they might not suspend you the same way today that they would, say, 10 years from now. If you talk to, you know, Mark Roth over at UW, who's doing hydrogen sulfide to put patients in a coma to do neurosurgery and stuff, right? That's pushed the window. It was only 10 years ago that Julian Bales at University of Pittsburgh said, we can't keep people alive and bring them back more than 1 hour and not start seeing cognitive deficits because of microstrokes that happen because of clotting by using these machines, the heart-lung bypass machines. So what I hear the technology saying to me is we need to improve it to a point where that isn't happening and that these windows get longer.
Correct.
That's
again, the argument that I guess sort of dovetails into that is once we prove the technologies that pulls me back in the first place, it sort of dovetails and goes along hand in hand with the other. But let's improve the technology so that folks who are currently... And I guess I'm the guy that everybody frozen is relying on. Let's improve the technology so that we can get back the folks who are frozen. But hey, unless we do that.
It's the whole... Any medical technology that's developed for therapy will also eventually be used for advancement.
Yeah.
Right. And I think there's a spin-off, or maybe you could call it the serendipitous nature of selfish research. There's always a broad, I mean, it's like people trying to clone themselves. That's a big discussion. People go, oh, is that right? Is that wrong? But while that's going on, there's other aspects of that that's very useful, you know, of all things fertility studies. So, you know, it's interesting how things that are seemingly are only for a few, a little bit down the road can have broader application.
And pure technological advancement, it is what it is.
Right.
Your power takes up. I mean, that's probably the first place I go with that. Designing a weapon. As a sort of spotted history, perhaps.
But that may improve. A friend of mine has actually been hired by a company to come up with the next generation of nuclear reactors.
I think we're tangent.
Yeah. Oh, tangent. Oh,
yeah.
That's right. Okay, back to...
Huh? Are we convinced yet? Can we sign you up?
No, you cannot sign me up. I'm more okay with other people signing up than I was before, but I still...
We have a lot of good points. They're not going to go away. I mean,
yeah.
We all have reasonable points here, but I think, ideally,
I would like to see you a lot.
Yeah.
We'd all rather see you get an amygdala transplant. Then.
Let's
keep us all alive and kicking for the duration rather than have to worry about that.
I'm much more interested in uploading than I am.
I wish I believed in uploading.
Well, slow through.
But.
Cyborg stuff.
But I have I'm less convinced about cryonics now than I was in the past, ironically.
Mm-hmm.
Not just because I knew the people who were starting a lot of this and lost a lot of confidence in what I saw them doing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the argument, several people have said this, that in the years it will take to get that even reasonably reliable,
mm-hmm.
there's so many other things that will prove the reasons you die in the first place, that you get a shrinking population who needs it. You know, so it may end up sort of obsoleting itself, if you will.
No, I understand.
Oh, so you're thinking that because we'll be needing less and less people, we have less and less people signing up for cryonics.
But
by the time we're longer and longer, the research impetus will be gone.
And you also have fewer people dying.
By the time we're actually good at cryonics, what's the point of bringing them alive? Keep everybody alive.
Exactly. And I think major repairs, even when you're clinically dead, will not be impossible then either. Once we get the hang of where are the memories, where does the stuff live, and how do you reanimate that, that's the core problem that everyone I know in the field for 30 years have been arguing about. Off topic of that. But I mean, within their own fields, everyone's arguing this. You know, it's a religious question as much as anything. Where's the sense of self? Where's your spirit? Is it prefrontal cortex, a little spot? Or is it a whole brain function like an application program that picks up?
I don't think that's a religious question. I think you have to do that.
It's a hard
one. It's hard one.
But that's the heart of, I think, a lot of what we're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, is it worth preserving? Why should you suffer? Why are we so important?
That's why I want to ask the odds question, is that in order for you to make a decision on whether you want to sign yourself up, you need to ask yourself what the odds are in paying off. Is it worth investing?
Yeah, that's another thing, is that the money, it's not, if it doesn't work, it's money wasted.
True.
If it does work, though, you got a second chance.
And if it doesn't work...
I'm not
work,
a gambling person.
But what happens if you go to vacation? I don't say you personally, but there are people who spend thousands of dollars going somewhere, and they go, oh, it's terrible, I should never have gone there. Boy, that was a waste of money.
They're still stimulating those economies.
And you'd be stimulating whoever is getting money to keep you in whatever state you're in, too.
Yes, and if there's this pool of funds that's being locked up, you know, compounding interest, et cetera, I'm sure that's going to be taxed.
That's true. So you are going to help.
Yeah, and taking that pool of money locked away helps keep inflation down, so you do kind of, you know, have a secondary benefit.
That's a good point. It's a very good point. So if it did end up being more people than I think, then, as you say, it's a very good point, then there is still that that outreach trickle down.
Trickle down. So terrible.
But, no, I
believe in trickle down technology, maybe not trickle down money.
Yeah,
and that's probably not going to be a problem. I'm speculating, but you know, about the whole money situation and nanotechnology and, you know, using bartering or reputation economies, etc. in the future. But yeah, it's exciting. I mean, this is something that, you know, has the potential to converge, right when everything else is converging and maybe eclipsing everything and making it all move will be the singularity if that ever happens, you know. Then you have the issue of, well, nobody ever really signed up for that, I mean, except for the people who are totally crazy about it, but, yeah.
Okay. Anybody have any closing stuff?
Looks like food for you thinking on that. It's good.
Who are some famous people that have signed up for?
Disney, right?
Frozen. No one knows if Disney is actually Frozen.
It's usually secret.
Or is that a real
people? Because Ted Williams was done against his family. Mm-hmm. Like crazy. Because they just did his head.
Right.
Hacks off.
I would bet Kurzweil.
Oh, yeah.
I believe he is the only person I know for a fact is Elias Murkowski.
And how about Steve Paul?
We should definitely keep it south,
right?
I think so. I mean, he's not happy with his body.
Right?
Yeah.
He's in the market for a new one.
I know someone who signed up for it,
oh,
but
really?
he was not going to come to the meeting tonight because he had a hot date.
Oh.
I couldn't really blame him.
Good perspective to that.
Well, there you go. I think that's healthy.
I asked him about it, and he's like, I don't really know if it'll work, but why not?
Yeah.
You know, he has a lot of expendable income, and he puts a lot of it into the community, and so he, like, I don't feel so bad about him, because, like, he already does a lot, and now he's just like,
that's going to be a number of people who are like that. It's just like, who's buying the new electric cars, the Tesla cars, their sports cars, you know, $100,000 electric cars,
yeah.
But it's now making it possible to make a cheaper car.
The economy of scale.
Exactly.
Sort of argument.
So that may happen too in this. So even looking at it from the front end, it looks egregious.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe
we're just
insulting.
Seeing the spirit.
What?
We're just seeing the spirit.
We're just seeing the spirit.
Yeah.
And look at it after a few years, assuming these progress.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How many people have laptops? People had cell phones.
I don't think it'll take off myself.
No, but I think it repairs to the brain. There's a program that people come out to improve your driving skills when you're older. Just a simple, you know, just a simple program on a computer. It's no big deal, but it's a big deal.
When you ran with that comparison with cell phones, and I can just imagine all these sort of tweens and teenagers in like 20, 30 years being all excited about cryonics. And it's like, no. I went the wrong place with that.
Yeah.
Well,
I think the biggest improvement is going to be not the implantation, but the ability to grow eternally without surgery, a replacement part, or
more. Again, that's coming at it from the other end of stuff we can do with folks who are still alive.
Right, right, exactly.
And it grows, out of that same sort of field of technology.
Yeah.
We're approaching the same problem.
Right.
That's right. By reducing the pool of people who are going to need as critical or severe comprehensive, instead of working on smaller problems, just like you take antibiotics rather than die of a bacterial infection these days.
Yeah.
You know, it takes something at some point, your memory's going, we'll do some tests, and I see that part of you, do a scan, you know, a functional MRI, and take a look and say, you've got a little piece of a spur in your bone there, and they're going to give you this thing, and that's targeted, and it goes there, and it dissolves, and there's no surgery.
Pills.
Nanobots. Go in there and repair it.
I think it will happen like that. It's going to be very crude, like it is now. I mean, I know guys have been working on trying to replace colonoscopy instead of a colonoscope, this monstrous thing, with a little pill that has a laser. And it
he's a guy that grew up.
It actually exists right now.
That's a cool thing.
Did
you
not?
Guy's developing.
Laser guided robot bills.
That's like a movie that came out 20 years ago.
It burns out the little
Fantastic
columns.
Voyage, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's true. The first one that came out just did the observation by camera. The one that is being worked on right now actually burns out the polyps. in a better, more accurate way than conventional cost because where they miss happens.
Do the doctors drive the little pill on the computer?
It's $500, you know, sort of, there it goes.
And then you put it out.
Yep. But you don't have to do nearly the scene, and it's really important. It does repair on the spot of things that were typically missed. They miss half of them, even though the quote gold standard, because there's things go off topic. Whoop.
I'm going to close it down.
All right.
And then we can keep talking.
Nah. I think I said enough about that.
Oh, no, that's amazing.